Our guest today is someone who needs no introduction in FM circles, but we're going to give him one anyway. Mark Whittaker is the chair of the Institute of Workplace and Facilities Management, general manager at Thomson FM, a trained mental health first aider, and now the founder of APSAS, a bold new initiative to improve standards and progression in asset surveying. Over the past 20 plus years, Mark has led from the front, helping shape the FM profession through leadership, mentoring, volunteering, and policy work. He's also one of the most respected and down-to-earth voices in the industry, and today we're diving into what it means to push FM forward with purpose. Mark, welcome to the FM Fix.
Hi, Tom.
Great to have you.
Yeah, thank you for the invite.
No problem. Let's start with APSAS.
Yep.
First of all, what does it stand for?
I suppose in terms of its name, it's the Association for Professional Standards in Asset Surveying. What does it stand for as an organisation? We just felt as a group of individuals that in the industry, there wasn't a professional association that represented the crucial function of asset surveying, particularly for mechanical and electrical assets. And we came at it with a mandate of wanting to change that and to have a professional association that can drive those professional standards, offer career pathways, offer clear competencies, and also work collaboratively. And that was a key issue for us, really, to having a collaborative approach to launching it and then taking the association forward, really.
And why now?
You say why now? It's taken us about 2.5 years to get to this point. And I think part of that was to make sure that we had that stakeholder engagement and can't be underestimated, you know, what we needed to do in terms of getting a series of roundtable events so that organisations that would usually be in competition with each other were there in a room to say, no, we need to change things here. We need to do more to professionalise the way that asset surveying is done. We used that as a blueprint then of putting some ideas forward in terms of different levels of competence, where there may be training required as well, and also how we go out there and help inform customers when they are procuring asset surveying, what level of competence they can expect to get from surveyors, but also crucially addressing some of the issues that came out of the roundtables. And a lot of organisations were saying, listen, we've got like an ageing demographic of asset surveyors out there. We need young people to come into the profession, but young people don't necessarily see what that pathway is going to look like and how they can progress. So that was a piece of work in terms of defining those competencies and making sure everybody's happy with those. So there's a long conversation that was required in terms of those. And then the actual mechanics of launching professional association and getting advice from others. So we collaborated with the Institute of Asset Management. It helped with my role with IWFM, the Institute of Workplace and Facilities Management, that I was able to kind of involve people there in conversations as well and to collaborate on that so that we were in a situation where we could then legally set up the association, do all the legal stuff for that, get the website launched, and then have a clear idea in terms of what we want to do with the association going forward.
So Mark, what was the moment that you realised that this was the direction you wanted to go in?
I'm going to really use a cliche here because a lot of people talk about their careers in facilities management as being a career of chance and that certain things happen that allows them to then go into that career. I want that to change and we can do that through career pathways. But from a personal perspective, I suppose my career in facilities management started, I was working for an organisation, a contractor that was involved in social housing. And they were interested in going into the facilities management industry. They didn't know a lot about it. So what I did is I locked myself in the University of Manchester Business Library for a few days and read what I could about the industry and all the reports. And then I did a report back to the board to suggest this is the size of the industry, this is the opportunities, these are the services. And that was me then kind of, I'd caught the bug a bit then. And it wasn't long after that that I wanted actually to go into the FM profession. So it's fortuitous in a way that that's how I got into it. But a lot of people follow similar pathways, that they may be, may have been asked to do a certain role and then added responsibilities given to them of maybe looking after the servicing of the fire alarms or other kind of areas of management. And before they know it, they're being trained up to be a facilities manager.
What's one recurring issue that you see with clients' data, and what sort of problems can it cause?
I suppose the one recurrent issue is just the poor quality of the data. And it is sometimes, unfortunately, as fundamental as that. I think there was a recent survey that SFG 20 did, and they published the results last month, and we're showing that I think it was 31% of the respondents still had their asset information on spreadsheets rather than in a CAFM system, and only 9% were happy that their asset information was up to date, really. And I think when you look at the whole arrangement for delivering those hard FM services in particular, the importance of good quality asset data historically is always kind of overlooked and not addressed, because it's not seen as something that you get an immediate return on your investment for, that it's almost like a necessary evil. But it's having those kind of conversations that the industry needs to have to really understand the importance of. It is utterly, you know, fundamental, and your whole FM strategy can be kind of built on the foundations of good asset data. But it's not there. It can cause huge problems going forward, really.
Interesting. And just a follow-on from that, as a new facilities manager going into a new space without an asset register, you know, where do you start, you know?
Yeah, and it's important getting the right people. And I suppose this links to what we're mentioning before about the new association, is the fact that you need professionally competent people to do it. You know, you sometimes see organisations say, well, we get the engineers to go and do it when they can, when they're going around a building, or we've asked the contractors if they can give us some of the information and we put that in a spreadsheet. But fundamentally, you need a consistent approach to getting that asset information, because how do you show compliance if you don't know what assets you've got? You know, and a key part of kind of the Building Safety Act and the recommendations coming out of that and the call to action for the FM profession, the first point that a lot are talking about is getting your asset information up to date. And then that drives then your asset management strategy. So, it's a fundamental part of it. And I think, again, it's for anybody young coming into a building to do that. That, it, again, is foundational. If we're using a metaphor of the buildings, it is a foundational part of your strategy going forward, that you have good asset data.
And how do people get involved?
So at this moment in time, what we're planning to do with the new association is we're going to do a launch event, which we're hoping to publish details of soon. This moment in time, we are offering corporate membership to organisations. So we've already had quite a number of inquiries after the launch last month. And for that, there is a training competency manual that we've developed, which is provided as part of that. And then really it's a case of then we're hoping to then develop online training. And again, competency assessments as well as part of that. The aim will be that we'll be in a position to offer individual membership at some point in the future. But our short-term kind of focus at this moment in time is getting the industry involvement, getting the corporate membership, and then kind of developing a timeline then of future activities and getting the message out there. And that will involve, hopefully as well, kind of publishing white papers and good industry practice, but also collaborating as well with other professional institutes and industry bodies. And that's one interesting thing coming out of the launch, the number of approaches that we've received from different organisations to say, this is overdue, actually. We'd like to have a bit of a conversation with you as to how we can link what we're doing with what you're doing to get the message out there.
And how do CAFM systems get involved with this? Because, you know, they've got a large chunk of the market. Can they really get involved with this new standard?
Yeah, and I think I think in terms of CAF and providers, it is important for them to get involved, because they're a crucial part of it in terms of why does an organisation, you know, want to get hold of good asset data? Invariably, that may be because they've got purchased a new CAFM system, or they may have an existing system which they know they're not optimising correctly. And as a consultancy, Thomson FM, we get involved a lot where clients come to us to say, listen, we just need to get some fresh asset data because the asset data we've got is out of date. It's not accurate, but we need to start optimising our CAFM system, and we need a new standardised approach of doing that. So I think with the association, really, it's a case of, although we are catering for that asset surveying element of that kind of FM lifecycle function as such, the CAFM system is crucial. Because the worst scenario would be that you do the asset surveys, you get all this information, and like the recent research showed, 31% then are holding that information within a spreadsheet. What's the purpose of that, really, when you've got the opportunity to really optimise and drive efficiencies through good asset data, but also fundamentally as well, show your compliance, start planning your asset life cycle, and building life cycle expectancy as well.
What does professionalising FM mean in practice?
If you'd asked me that question about kind of 8 years ago, I probably wouldn't have been as informed, perhaps, as I could potentially claim to be now. And that's only because of my role within Institute Workplace of Facilities Management, IWFM, because with having been chair of the association now, the Institute, for the last 4 years, and being on the board for the last 6 years, a crucial part of what IWFM do is relating to those professional standards and qualifications. So a key part of what IWFM do is making sure that the training and qualifications is geared towards what's really out there and important at the moment, and whether that be on decarbonisation, whether that be on scope 3 emissions, for example, and guidance on that, whether it be the response to the Building Safety Act and how FMs need to react to that type of thing. A key part of professional development for anybody in facilities management is having access to qualifications, having access to training. And the Institute launched about 2 years ago now a learning platform, an online learning platform, which makes that training so much easier because people can do it when they want rather than necessarily needing to travel anywhere or a defined time. So it's much more flexible in terms of how that training can be delivered. But also, as well as the training and qualifications, there's good practice guides. There's research and insight out there as well. And that's kind of key elements of how the Institute works to kind of professionalise the industry really and offering that member value, because crucially that's what IWFM is all about, because members, it's not it's a discretionary spend for them. And so the onus is always on with the Institute of being able to evidence that value for money membership and being able to help people on their career pathways and supporting them along there.
You've spent years driving standards through your work with the IWFM. What progress have you seen? And where do we still need to do more work?
Yeah, I think it's interesting when you look at the journey, I suppose, in the last 5 years, really, post the COVID lockdown situation, really. And the fact, you know, if I was talking to friends 8 years ago and I said I worked in facilities management, you could guarantee that most people within that room, or whether it be the pub or wherever, would haven't a clue what facilities management was about. But once you talk about kind of those services you take for granted, whether it be the cleaning, the reception, the keeping, the air conditioning, the heating on, all those kind of things, people suddenly think, right, okay, that's facilities management. But I suppose post-COVID and how workplaces have evolved since then, the workplace has really evolved from then, and the FM as a profession has really evolved as well during that particular time as well. So in terms of professional standards, there is a greater level of competency required. And it's not just on kind of hard skills. It's the soft skills as well, the leadership side of things, the kind of mental health and support side of things as well has become more prominent than perhaps it was in the past as well. But also supporting organisations' objectives in terms of decarbonisation, social value, for example. I think more and more organisations are seeing their facilities management teams and workplace teams as part and a really important part of delivery of those services. I suppose another key role of the Institute as well in terms of driving standards and addressing some of the needs of the industry as well is the whole skills shortage problem that the industry faces. And that's not just in pockets of areas. You know, it's not just, say, for example, in the cleaning side of things, where, you know, we're coming out of lockdown, a lot of people left cleaning roles and we're going into different areas, whether it be hospitality, because there were more attractive pay rates and a clearer progression potentially in careers, but also on the technical side of things. Within the FM profession as well. And I was doing a client workshop up in Scotland a couple of months ago, and I was getting some kind of data on the industry. And one thing I didn't realise until I'd done the research was the fact that the number of qualified electricians in the UK economy in the last 7 years, so since 2018, had reduced by 20%. So you've got organisations that are struggling to deliver on some of their decarbonisation, their sustainability objectives, because you don't have necessarily the number of electricians to be able to do that and technical people to be able to do that as well. But you've also got a lot of organisations, both from a client side where those services are insourced or from an outsourced service provider point of view, where they are carrying lots of vacancies because they don't have the technical people coming through to do it. And a crucial part of IWFM's role, and it's something that was one of the things I was really championing when I kind of became chair of the Institute, was all about this career of choice initiative of getting into schools and speaking to young people and explaining a bit about what career pathways are about and what FM's about. And my mantra has always been, if you're sowing that seed at a very early stage, who knows where that may lead. It may lead following their university degree. They may decide actually they want to go into some form of apprenticeship. They may decide actually I want to go and work directly as soon as I finish my A-levels or GCSEs or wherever, wanting or college, wanting then to go and work for an organisation. So helping young people do that career pathways, really important part of it. Another important initiative that is aligned to encouraging young people into the profession is the Institute around 2 years ago launched a mentoring program. So we talk about all the experience that we've got in the industry. And the worst scenario could be that these people that have got this wealth of experience then kind of go into retirement and there is no means of tapping into that knowledge, skill, advice. So what the Institute did is launch a mentoring program, which has been really, really successful, so that any young person or even person mid-career that wants that kind of advice on what they need to do career development-wise, they then are linked to somebody that can mentor them. And it's a really kind of flexible arrangement, but really rewarding for the person that's receiving that advice. But also hugely rewarding as well for those that are actually able to give something back, because that's, you know, a lot of within our profession want to do is to pass on their knowledge and skills. And I think that's a really, really important part of that kind of career development side of things.
Mark, you're a trained mental health first aider. How can we make wellbeing an FM, not just an afterthought?
Yeah, I suppose from our perspective, from Thompson FM's perspective, there's probably a lot of organisations came at it in a similar way, that during lockdown, it was really difficult to understand how your team were, because you see people on the Teams call, but you don't necessarily know how they're really getting on, especially if the camera's off. Yeah. So I suppose from our perspective, when we were coming back into the workplace, we decided actually that we would have within the office two mental health trained first aiders. So it was myself and one of my colleagues went through that training, and earlier this year went through that refresher, because it was just over 3 years since I received that training. And I suppose from an organisational point of view, it's not there to give fixes to people, but to try and spot the signs and to help people find the right routes to gain some support where they need it. And I suppose the other thing that I've seen over the last kind of 3 or 4 years, particularly within the FM environment, but it'd be replicated across the economy, is that people are more comfortable talking about mental health some of the things that they may be facing outside of work or even in their working environment as well that really are impacting them. And they feel a lot more, hopefully a lot more comfortable. But I suppose from a mental health first aider point of view, it's being able to signpost to people that these people are trained to listen to you, because that's fundamentally a key part of it, clearly, is to listen to them, that they feel comfortable, be able to talk about it, and then potentially jointly then try and find a way that they can seek assistance and help in terms of that. And it can be anything from, in terms of increasing its prominence, it can be anything from having an agenda item on team meetings. So that's what we do. And I know a lot of organisations are exactly the same. It used to be you'd have a health and safety spot on meetings, which I've seen in the past. More and more organisations are having a mental health kind of agenda topic. And it may be access to a really good piece of a podcast, for example. You know, Michael Mosley, bless him, when he was alive, was doing, some great podcasts in terms of that as well. It may be access to talking about a specific issue, whether it be sleep deprivation or something like that, or dealing with anxiety. So you can have those kind of as an agenda item on the team meetings as well. What we also did as well, actually, is we all read a book that was relating to mental health, and then we had a kind of a follow-up session and discussion to say, well, what did you think about the contents of it, and how has it helped you in certain ways as well. And there's good authors out there, the likes of Matt Haig and others that have done really, really good books around that as well. And I suppose the other thing, as an industry, and it's something that I'm really passionate about as well in terms of being kind to one another, and it sounds really simplistic, and I believe there's a national empathy week coming up soon as well, and we've just had mental health awareness week as well, but I think it's really important that we're aware of what's going on in people's lives and try and be kind to them, because you don't know necessarily what is happening in someone's life, and whether that be in a client relationship, whether it be in one of subcontractors, whether it could be one of your other departments, or whether it be a colleague in your own department. I think it's really important sometimes we just take a step back and try and think that there may be other issues at play, and behaving in a certain way is not going to help them. And I think that's an important part of that mental health awareness, is trying just to broaden that understanding and that empathy. And I think that's a really important kind of area that mental health has supported people in the last 5 years in particular.
Are you seeing more demand for digital tools in FM? And how are Thompson FM making that shift?
Yeah, I think it's interesting, because it's that there is a lot of discussion out there about using digital tools and how that's evolving. And I think generally FM is not seen necessarily, or historically hasn't been seen, as fast adopters of new technology. And if we look at a profession where, like I mentioned previously, that 31% of people are still have got their asset information in a spreadsheet rather than in a CAFM system, there's still a lot that the industry needs, a progress that needs to be made in terms of that. But I think in terms of the adoption of digital technology, I think more and more organisations are understanding the need to embrace it and understand what's going out there at the moment. I think the important thing is to differentiate what is new and where the market's going to where it's historically been, and data sources that we've had in the past, whether it be a BMS system, and then just lazily attaching an AI tag to that and what is genuine artificial intelligence? What is it that we're actually doing with this data? And how can it then improve our efficiency and the return on the investment of that as well? So I think as an industry, there are still areas that we're still slow to adopt. And sometimes you get service providers that aren't necessarily prepared to invest in that because they'll say, well, the client won't pay for it. But it's still there as a competitive advantage for them in the marketplace. And I think more and more organizations are looking at the use of data and how then that helps deliver those FM services, how then it helps with their asset life cycle, how it helps with the fundamental operation of a building as well. And I think as we look forward for the FM profession, when you're getting more young people that are joining profession that are more kind of data and digital savvy, I'm really hopeful that those are going to be the agents of change within the profession, that they're going to be pushing the agenda forward on some of these items, and the traditional way of doing things will be old hat. And, you know, there'll be much more pragmatic and forward-thinking ideas coming forward in terms of those, how those services are delivered.
So, Mark, we know FMs are really great at putting out fires. We've got a closing tradition on this show. We call it the FM Fixes Reactive Round. Okay? No time to plan. You just got to respond, all right?
Okay, no pressure then.
If you could wave a magic wand and fix one thing in the industry overnight, what would it be?
Ooh, good question. I'm going to cheat, actually. I'm going to do one with magic wand for IWFM, and I'll do one from an industry perspective as well. From an IWFM point of view, the magic wand for the Institute would be chartership. It's something that we're working towards and continue to work towards, but there are so many hoops we have to jump through first before we can get to chartership. And that will be a crucial part for the Institute and also the professionalisation of the industry. In terms of the magic wand for the industry, it's getting that recognition really across, not just within a small section of the UK economy, a much wider scale, given the number of people that we employ, given the contribution that we make to the UK's GDP. It's having a wider profile and recognition, so that if you go to somebody in the street and say, tell me about facilities management, they would have an understanding. Now, I appreciate that is some magic wand that'd be able to do that, but that would be my wish, really.
And what's the most underrated skill in FM?
Well, I suppose if you're talking about putting fires out, the opposite to that is just getting things done so that those fires don't happen in the first place. Yeah. And I think, you know, I've heard people talking about, you know, when you go into the workplace and you notice how clean the workplace is, that the bins are emptied, that there's enough coffee for the machines, that it's nice and cool, you know, and that everything's running smoothly. That is where facilities management is, it's so important. And it's that kind of, it's almost under the radar. You know, when you talk to people, they sometimes will say, well, oh, right, okay, I didn't realise. I thought FM's just about fixing toilets. No, it's about making sure that toilet doesn't break in the first place. So there's all those kinds of things. But I think from an FM perspective, yeah, it's that proactivity. I think that is a real key part of probably an underrated value that's there at the moment.
And what would be your advice to anybody who's starting out their career in FM?
Wow, another good question, really. And I suppose it's something I'm asked quite a bit, actually, because I do sometimes will go in to speak to young people as well, but also get approached. I'm getting to that age now that people do contact me to say, I've just started off in FM. You couldn't have a chat with me and tell me what you think and how should I do this? I suppose there's lots of different areas of advice I would give. I suppose, first of all, is certainly in terms of training and qualifications, there is great access to that now. And I've got to say, but with IWFM, you've got, you know, introductory level. So when we took on an apprentice at work, the first thing that we did was put her on a course, an introduction to FM, because she hadn't a clue about FM, but it was a really good grounding for her then to start building her knowledge. But training, access to training and qualifications is really, really crucial. I would also advise anybody coming into the profession as well, is access to a mentor. to go out there and look for somebody that, and there's lots of people that willingly would give their time, their advice, their knowledge to help someone.
You're offering yourself out.
I have done it in the past, to be fair. But there's more and more people to do it. And I'm more than happy to do it. It's one of the reasons I do my role within the Institute. I want to give something back. And I think there's a lot of people. When you look at the kind of the fellows that we have within the Institute, for example, as well, there's so many of our fellows that are involved in mentoring. And I think that's really important. I suppose the other thing from a personal experience is another piece of advice is the networking side of things. And I think that's really, really important. And a lot of people are scared of networking because they just think they're going to get kind of hijacked by somebody wanting to flog them something and it just be really uncomfortable kind of salesy experience. But it's not. And I think building a network of professional people is there for advice. It's there to help in terms of when you ask or want to know a certain specific bit of knowledge or have a certain thing that you need to find out. But also they can help you along the way as well. And I think, you know, I look back in terms of my volunteering with the Institute, which was the British Institute of Facilities Management 15 years ago when I first started. There's people now that I've known from those first events that I went to as that nervous person that would stand in the corner not really wanting to speak to anybody because it's quite nerve-wracking. But I've known people within the industry now for a number of years, and anybody coming into that, especially when we've got groups like our Rising FMs within IWFM, you've got a peer-to-peer group of people there that you can kind of mutually support each other through that.
Mark, thank you so much for today. Really enjoyed the chat. You enjoyed it?
Yeah, I have. Thank you. My pleasure. It's really enjoyable. So thanks to you, Tom.
Thank you.